You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
The stamp, the kick, it's been blocked again! How about it? It's been blocked again!
He's going to heave one deep down the field. It's going to be to the goal line. It's going to be gone! It's a touchdown! And the Gators have won the game! Tyree Cleveland, how about it? I can't believe what I just saw!
Dropping back the throw, pops and fires the ball.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your boy Dan.
Delatory.
And your boy J Scott 2-5. What it do, y'all boys?
What up, 2-5?
Yes, sir.
As you guys can tell, we're missing Corey today. We got a special guest waiting for us, so we're gonna jump right into the show. We'll catch up about the weekend, peak elite washed activities on my end, making sourdough, all of that. But Nick, why don't you go ahead and do us a quick ad read for Brunt, and then we'll do Dykus Burke, and then we'll get into Neil Blackman.
Big shout out to the boys at Greg Brunt Insurance. Greg, what it do? From the panhandle to the keys, call Brunt Insurance for anything you need insured, home, life, car, boat, Dan's new hobby, sourdough making, oven insurance, possibly. Give him a call. The call is free. It's 954-589-2204. Greg, we've used him. My wife and I have used him for our home insurance. The call is free. Give Greg a call again at 954-589-2204 and see what Greg can do for you. SCA alum, Jordan. I haven't brought that up in a while. SCA fan.
Yeah, huge news for the brand over there at STA. I know last week somebody on the show said Greg saved him $1,600. I know that he's saved me a lot of money over the years. So go check it out. It's a good time to just check your insurance policy, make sure that you're getting the best rate out there. And then one more final read to kick us off is the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. You've heard us talk about them for a long time now, but they are going to be there to help you against the insurance companies. They've once worked for them. Now they're going to work against them to help protect you. So if you've ever had any issues with your house, flood, water damage, sinkhole damage, whatever it might be, based there in St. Pete, Florida, go check out the Dykus Burke and Lewis Law Group. You can check them out at Dykus, that's D-U-C-S, Burke, B-U-R-K-E, law.com, or give them a call at 855-652-1377. Just a good number to share or to store in your phone as you were embarking and not too much longer into hurricane season here in the state of Florida. So again, give them a call, 855-652-1377. Before we get into my washed activities, which I don't know if you guys really want to hear about, but made some sourdough Pop-Tarts. We're going to welcome on our friend Neil Blackman because we're up against the clock with him from the Florida Gator Basketball Hour, one of our favorite podcasts, a member of the Stadium and Gale Network. Neil, thanks for joining, my friend.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good. Man. Doing well.
Good to have you back on. Neil, Gators on a bit of a hot streak right now. 4 wins in a row, including wins over Oklahoma and Vanderbilt. A big, huge top 10 road win for the Gators on Saturday, which I know fans were glued to their seat. I think that game and Ruben Chinyelu's games against Oklahoma and Vanderbilt earned him. Was it SEC Defensive Player of the Week, or was it just overall Player of the Week?
He just got – straight up SEC Player of the Week. He deserved it, and my guy got it.
That's awesome. Neil, I know the season maybe didn't start the way Gator fans wanted in terms of a win-loss record, but it seems like they're kind of finding their mojo. Boogie Flan cut his hair a bit. Xavier Lee's starting to make some shots. The rest of the team is starting to kind of gel a little bit better together. Talk to us a little bit about a little bit of the turnaround here for the Gators.
Yeah, I mean, I think – you know, some of it's super obvious, like the guards needed to play just a little better. They had to bang down some shots. You know, I mean, I think as good as Chinyelu was the other day, Florida shot 9 of 24 from three. So that was one of their best performances from three-point range the whole season. And they won by 4 points, right? They needed those buckets. And they're going to have nights like that where they shoot around 40% from outside. I'm not saying that they have to do that all the time. Clearly they don't, but they can't. I don't think that this team, to reach their goals, win the SEC championship, compete to go back to the Final Four, they, you know, 27% from three wasn't going to cut it. So the guards have to play a little better offensively. And then I think the other thing that, like, has changed a little bit is Florida has just sort of embraced guarding. And I know that's weird to say after the Vanderbilt game when it seemed like they couldn't get a stop to save their lives. But I think, like, they held Georgia, the number one offense in the country, to 22 points under their season average. They held Duke, a really good offense, to 13 points under their season average in their own building. Now, they lost, but they have really started to embrace getting stops and just being gritty and, you know, that kind of aspect of basketball. And that's okay. Like, Houston was very similar. Great rebounding team, great defensive team, and they were one possession away from being national champions last year. So that can be your identity. But you have to kind of be okay with that. And I think it started really on the Duke trip, and I know they didn't get the results they wanted in that game, but they showed just how good they could be against one of the country's best teams, and it's really carried over. And then to blow out Tennessee the way they did, go on the road, take care of business against Oklahoma, and then play at Memorial Gym, a place that has haunted Gator fans since I was in college, which now is getting to be too long. you know, like, that's impressive stuff.
And part of that, Neil, I got the Dan, you'll be jealous. I got the chance to sit next to Neil, both at Rupp and at Madison Square Garden. I think part of that early struggles, if you want to call it, is losing a neutral site game in Las Vegas to Arizona, who's 18-0, in a unanimous number one, losing a neutral site game to UConn in North Carolina, and then losing a road game to Duke. You can say TCU, but I think TCU is even playing better than they were when Florida lost to them. And obviously you have an SEC loss, but a lot of that was just the non-con schedule was far different than it was last year during the championship run. And I think it was even, you know, we were talking during the UConn game being like, this is March basketball. Like, the intensity of this, it might be December, but like the way the two teams are going after it, the competition level, this isn't first 10 games of the year. These teams are going at it. And we even like turned around and talked to the one of the UConn SIDs or videographer or something. We're like, dude, that was an awesome game. And then I remember I had somebody telling me on Twitter that Florida would be lucky to be an NIT team. And I think I said that out loud and you kind of just laughed at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. I mean, like, so Florida has played in three games that are Sweet 16 level quality games, maybe even four, before Saturday. You know, the Arizona game was incredible. Arizona made some really hard shots. Like, there's a stat called shot quality. I don't think it's the be all and end all. But I think it's interesting, like, just to see, like, and all it measures is, you know, when you get a certain look, whether it's uncontested or where it is on the floor, and then percentages, how often it should go in. And so Florida's record on shot quality is 15 and 3. And the games they lost on shot quality were Duke, TCU, and Missouri. And that's it. Like, so that means Arizona and UConn, they were getting better shots, and those teams were just making incredible shots. The Duke game, they lost shot quality by one. The Missouri game, they lost shot quality by two, and they lost by two. So I think that's kind of interesting. And I feel like the only game that Todd Golden and the staff would say, you know, we really should have won that game, maybe two, is either the Duke game, because they just needed one stop, or – the TCU game where they're up 11 points with 7 minutes to go. And I think TCU will go to the NCAA tournament. So there's not a loss to somebody that's not going to the NCAA tournament, except, you know, we'll see what happens with Missouri, but that's a tough place to play. And it's a road game in league, which is always difficult. And it's the first road game in league. So there, you know, should they have probably beat Missouri and TCU? Yeah. Is there any shame in like a functional road game against Arizona, an actual road game at the toughest environment in the sport in Duke, and then UConn second home, Madison Square Garden? No. And all those games were close. 5 games by 17 points. So the sky was never falling, but you know, it feels that way when you're coming off a national title. And I think it felt that way when your big two portal additions were not producing at the level that people expected them to produce. And that's the nature of the beast. I know I don't got to tell you guys that. Like, the reality is what you retain kind of gets taken for granted. So the fact that Florida really made more than two splashes, like they retained Tommy Houck, Duke made a huge push to get him to leave. They retained Alex Condon, who had an opportunity to go on a two-way to the NBA, probably. And, you know, they retained Ruben Chinyelu, who tested the draft waters. Well, retaining that front court was a huge deal, right? But you don't get the flowers from the fan base for that. You get the flowers for what happens in the portal. And Boogie Flam wasn't making shots, and Xavier Lee wasn't making shots. And you just had the greatest backcourt in the history of the SEC when all they did was make shots. So I think people were panicking a little bit, and it turns out this team's pretty good too. They're number top 10 in every analytical measure. They got a 4-game win streak, and until Saturday, they had been destroying their last few opponents. We'll see if that continues this week with two home games, but momentum is good.
Speaking of momentum, Neil, I just found this stat. This is from Evan Mayakala. He does Evan Maya. We've had him on the show over the last couple of years. He said that Florida is the only team, only the high major team, to allow 0-10-0-plus runs by the other team this year, which is, you know, obviously demonstrates their ability to never lose control of the game. But to be the only team in college basketball at a high major to be able to do so is pretty incredible for them. And I also saw that this was Todd Golden's fourth road win against a top 10 team in the last three seasons. UF only has 9 all time. So almost half of Florida's top 10 road wins have come in the last three seasons under Todd Golden, which I think speaks volumes for him and the team mentality as well.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I think all that's all great. Those are great stats. Mm-hmm. I mean, the floor for this Florida team was always like, it's the round of 32. Like there's a very, I can't think of a team right now that I would see play this team in the first round of the NCAA tournament and say, oh, Florida's in trouble, even if they don't hit shots because of that front court. So then it becomes like, okay, well, what's the ceiling? And I think for a lot of people, the problem was the ceiling and the floor looked really close together, right? Think about like some of the Jim McElwain teams that made Atlanta, right? Like, you know, you knew what
Watch you out. Were That's get. Jordan's guy.
No, but like
Jordan's guy,
you knew what you were going to get from like Jordan, and you knew what you were going to get from the defense. Right. But like, it was, you know, was Austin Appleby going to hit an 89 yard pass to Tyree Cleveland? You know,
he's one of Jordan's 7 quarterbacks. We didn't know which one.
That's right. Did you need that to win? Like, the point being, your margin for error was small. Right. And I think that's kind of Florida's margins felt much smaller the first half of the year because they are, and they were. I think Florida's margin is growing now. Urban Klabsar has been super reliable, is shooting 36% from deep off the bench. And Tommy Houck is starting to hit more threes, not just take more threes. You know, he's shooting about 40% from three in SEC play. And then, you know, I think Boogie's just getting comfortable. He needs to be on the ball more. Even in the Vanderbilt game, a lot of the possessions where Xavier Lee made plays, Flan had the ball, and then they'd run a screen to get Xavier Lee the ball, and then another screen to either get Xavier downhill, or they'd run a screen to get Xavier the ball and then set up in isolation for Xavier, which is, I think, better for him. But him being off the ball more is good. Boogie being on the ball more as a more natural point guard is good. So the staff is figuring out the players too, which is what good staffs do.
That's just Neil's long-winded way of saying that there weren't buckets in Boogie's dreads. And cut out non-buckets.
Look at how much Jordan improved when he cut his dreads off too, you know?
It was just a weight balance in the shot, I think is what was happening.
All the love to Walt Clayton's cousin, man. That's it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Real quick, I think a lot of, and you can tell me if this is antiquated thinking here, a lot of like the confidence last year in Florida was when you get into the tournament, age, experience, and guard play gets you through. And last year you looked like, okay, well, you have three senior guards who are the best guys in your team, and you've got a good front court. You know, Ruben Chinyelu is kind of your enforcer. You've got 2 7-footers down there. And Tommy is kind of like a swing guy that can play big, play small. Do you see this front court being able to push Florida in March? Because I think we know what we're going to get from the backcourt.
So you mentioned that, or Dan mentioned the Evan Miakawa stat about the runs. Mm-hmm. And like Florida's not like it's going to win, and if they lose in the NCAA tournament, it's going to crush people because it will be a close game. They just are not that front court. The way they rebound is historically good. I think they're on pace to be one of the first three teams, the third team in the KenPom era. So that's 1997. So first one of three teams in 30 years to finish top 5 in offensive and defensive rebounding percentage. That's ruthlessly good on the glass. And they don't give up a lot of 2-pointers. They're top 20 in the country in 2-point defense. So I think it's just going to be hard to beat them in March. Now, to your question, can the front court kind of propel them to the front? No. And that's the answer I think Florida fans don't love. But I think the reality is, like, one of Boogie Fland and Xavien Lee, if not both, but I think one of, we just saw them win at Vanderbilt with one of them being really good. We saw them blow out Tennessee with one of them being really good. One of those two guys has to produce in every game in the NCAA tournament. You ultimately need guards to win in March. I mean, Florida does not win the national championship unless Walter Clayton goes absolutely berserk in the last 5 minutes of the Texas Tech game. I know it. People forget they were behind by 9 in the Final Four to Auburn. And then, you know, Will Richard gets fouled on a drive. Walt hits a couple shots, and all of a sudden it's tied, right? Like just like that, blink your eyes. That's what guard play gets you. I think they feel really good about where Urban Klavzar is, and they need one of those two starting guards to produce night in, night out. And then you have a Final Four ceiling because of that front court. And once you get, you know, really once you get to the Sweet 16, all 16 of those teams tend to be pretty close together, and like anything can happen.
What about Isaiah Brown? We've seen him start to play a bit better. I know that you mentioned the guard play a little bit. Is he earning himself some more minutes? Is he just in a position where he just hit the ball really well against Vanderbilt? I think it was 14 points off the bench. Do we anticipate seeing him a little bit more?
Man, I love the way Isaiah's playing. And it starts with defense with him. Like, I think – so Zay, it was all his consistency in practice. And some coaches, and like I cover the SEC at Saturday Down South, so I know at this point I know most of these guys, and like some of them will say, "Oh, you got to practice hard to play for me," and then they roll out the same 9-man rotation no matter how a guy plays. And then Ty Golden says, "You got to practice hard to play for me, and if you miss a box out in practice, I might sit you." And that's where Zay Brown was, like just lack of consistency at practice. And so they kept that battle for the 8th man going. And he started practicing better in late December and then started playing better around that time in games. I'm glad you mentioned his offense, but the key with him, so Florida's defense is in the 94th percentile in the country when he's on the floor. And they're in the 63rd percentile when he's not on the floor in the last five games. So that gives you an idea. Like, they just defend at such a higher level when he's out there. And it's because, like, it's they don't have to worry about mismatches with their bigs. I mean, you think about the Georgia game, and yes, they held them 22 under their average, but how many times were Georgia's guards getting into the paint, right? Now, they had trouble finishing over all of Florida's height, but they were getting where they wanted on the floor a lot. And Todd said, you know, that's what happens. You play as big as we do. If you play somebody that has four guards and can spread you out, well, Zay Brown means Florida can show different looks to those teams. And, you know, having that is really invaluable. And then he makes that one freakish play a game where you're just like, what kind of athlete is that guy? And you can see why he was, you know, a top 100 recruit.
I'm interested. What do you know what his vert is?
41 and a half.
It's not bad. I'm around there.
A lot. That's too jump for you, Nick.
That's a whole lot.
I didn't say how many jump. I am around there. I mean,
it's
say the quiet part out loud, Dave.
It's second on the team. It's second on the team.
Wow.
So yeah, CJ Ingram.
And then last one, I know we're up against the time with you here. Just getting Tommy back, you mentioned that, but I remember you mentioning, you know, some of the stuff that NBA scouts had said about him. Just how have you seen his game progress? And you've already mentioned he's making more threes, not just taking more threes. But just how have you seen his overall game progress? I think he's kind of been really the big standout. For me, at least, in my amateur eye watching it, the big standout for Florida this year.
I think he's going to be an All-American. I don't know if he'll be first team or second team or third team. But I think he's going to be an All-American. I think he should be a top 10 pick. I'm stealing that from Dan Hurley. You know, Nick was in there when Danny Hurley was like, he should be a top 10 pick. I think he should be. I saw a mock draft that had him 11th today, which is the highest I've seen one. I think The Athletic has moved him into the lottery. So it's there. I would say what I'm most impressed with him is defense right now. Like, I thought moving him to the three, he would have some trouble fighting around screens, chasing smaller, quicker guys. That has not been the case. Believe it or not, there's a stat called defensive win shares, just kind of measures your impact defensively when you're on the floor versus when you're off of it. He is first on the team in that category, ahead of Chinyelu, which is amazing. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, his three-point shooting has improved. When he gets to his right hand, forget about it. He's scoring. I don't know why defenses haven't tried to force him left more. I guess it's tough when he's that big and fast. But yeah, I mean, he's just like, what a story in terms of development, in terms of, you know, a guy that just competes harder than everyone on the floor most nights. You know, I don't think anybody in the country plays harder than him. I think you're talking about a guy whose legacy is going to be one of the five greatest players to ever play at Florida in basketball. And that's pretty incredible. And I think he hears his name in the lottery, at least this June.
It'd be an awesome story for him. Well, Neil, we know we're up
New Oxford, PA.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, Neil, we know you got to run, man. We appreciate you coming on. Why don't you plug where everybody can find you? We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Florida Basketball Hour is part of the Stadium and Gale Network. Proud to be affiliated with all y'all. You know, so check us out over at Florida Basketball Hour. We have a new show that will drop tonight. And then patreon.com/FloridaBBHour. Our Patreon's probably still the best way to support us.
Mm-hmm.
Just because Fawcett does a ridiculous amount of work on that thing. And that's where a lot of our game previews and like post game thoughts are and stuff. So appreciate you guys checking that out. Thanks for having me, boys.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day, Neil.
Thank you, Neil.
Take care, brother.
All right. Always good to have Neil on, man. Always good to have Neil. Well, let's do a quick ad read and then we'll get on to the show. There is another transfer that announced he's coming to Florida during our show. So we get to be the first ones to talk about him. So before we get to do that, one time for our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks, you heard probably my ice in the microphone last week. Somebody complained about it from this cup. It's just what happens when the cup keeps the ice a lot colder. So go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code STADIUM15. You get 15% off of your order. You've seen us. We've talked about him for years. Neil on Florida Basketball Hour, they were talking about him as well. But they're going to keep your hot drinks hot, your cold drinks cold. Go support our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks. Use promo code STADIUM15 and check out and get you 15% off of your order. All right, gentlemen. Another week of transfer portal additions. Today, this is a new name, so I don't know a ton about him. The Gators grabbed New Haven tight end Evan Chasia, who's 6'5", 250 pounds. Last season in 2025, recorded 31 catches, 255 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Now, we touched about this last week when we talked about the tight end room, but obviously a room that lost a lot of not just production in that room, but lost bodies in that room. So the Gators grabbed him. Nick Jordan, I'm throwing this at you. You know anything about this guy?
Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah.
Oh, you first? How nice of you.
That's what happens when he announces 5 minutes into our interview with Neil here.
Yeah. Let's see about the game, man. I definitely want to, you know, do a little dive in and see what we got on our hands, but I'm kind of still just questionable on the whole tight end room in general, you know, how we're going to use them and what they're going to do. So it's to be determined.
Yeah, man, I don't know. So he is the 28th player to join the Gators via the transfer portal, originally from New York. The Gators added him, James Madison tight end, Lakota Dupree, and Georgia Tech tight end, Luke Harpring, and then also obviously kept Amir Jackson in the transfer portal as well. From a productivity perspective, definitely going to be fourth in that list. I think Harpering had quite a bit of production and knows the offense at Buster Faulkner's producing. James Madison tight end, Lakota Dupree. I think that was a, you know, we just had some questions, not necessarily any real assumptions, just kind of questions on his productivity there, but definitely a room that is, and I'm kind of going off the top of my head here, but I think you're returning less than 1,000 yards of receiving between all four of the tight ends that the Gators have. So definitely going to be some new names out of this group.
Yeah, I think you got Mike Jones back and Jackson back, and that was it.
Yeah. And then I guess Hezzy Kent maybe freshman. A tight end. I don't know. I'll give him the ball, but
he's proven to me already. I give him the rock. Yeah, me.
Yeah, Silk was saying put him at defensive tackle, defensive end.
Yeah, my little wild. I like him.
Chad here said he might be a special teams guy. Yeah, we don't know. It's just what position they are, where they're coming from. Again, not a guy that I was expecting or even had heard the name of before 5 minutes into Neil's interview. So the Gators grab him. You know what I mean? So you need bodies. At the end of the day, you also need bodies.
Yeah, so you add 4 and you had 2 return because Scott Isaacs left, Tony Livingston left, Cameron Kossman left, Hayden Hansen left. So you only returned 2. You needed to fill the room out.
You need 6, yeah. So whether he lands on special teams, whether he lands as a starting tight end, or whether he lands nowhere, Evan Chasia, that's C-H-I-E-C-A, from New Haven, 6'5", 250 pounds there. Yesterday, the Gators are – pardon me, they landed Mason Clinton from Southern Miss. He has 2 years of eligibility left last season. 6 solo tackles – I'm sorry, I should say 6'5", 300 pounds defensive tackle. Had 6 solo tackles last year, 16 total tackles. 1.5 tackles for loss, 1 PBU in 12 games, started his career at Louisiana. Then he went to East Mississippi Community College, then to Southern Miss, and now to Florida. So 4 schools in his 4th year. That's a name that, and we'll talk about him in a second, but replaced the transfer from Baylor that announced that he was going to go to Colorado.
Jordan, yeah, that's Jordan's favorite Portal Wars there.
Yeah, so tough, right? Committed to us and then flipped on us last minute. So I'm not mad with the get as far as just another depth piece on the D-line. I feel like we had a lot of guys kind of leave as well, and from the especially in the interior. So I think it was just a good get just to build some depth. And who knows? Just because he went to four schools doesn't mean he's, you know, a slouch or anything. Maybe he can be a guy for us under the right coaching.
Chance man potential?
Hi. Yep, exactly. Got to start there. It's just a little start.
I mean, that's a chance man position right now in Florida with how thin they were coming back.
One interesting thing is that it's like Florida's getting close to the 85. So last year, the SEC maintained that you could only have 85 scholarship players, even though that number ballooned to 105 and some schools went to 105 on scholarship. That becomes like a rev share math problem. The SEC lifted it this year, and I've had writers – I don't know what they're going to do. I've had writers reach out to me. My goodness, the sun just hit me there. I've had writers reach out to me, and they're like, do you know if there's like a handshake agreement between the SEC that they're going to stay at a certain, you know, number? And I'm like, I don't know. But Florida's right around that 85 number right now, and I don't know what the SEC is going to do. I know they lifted the ban, but I think it's tough to add 20 players to what you had in a single off season.
28.
Well, no, I'm saying.
I see what you're saying.
To a bigger number to get from your mindset has always been, all right, 85 scholarships. And then to get, cause you're going to lose 10, 15, 20 guys to the portal every year. It just seems to be the way that it is. So then you're thinking about adding 40. If you're losing 20, you're not thinking, oh, I have to add 20 to get to that number. You're thinking, I have to add 40 to get to this new bigger number. And that's a monumental task to add 40 guys into the transfer portal.
How many guys did Florida have in the recruiting class? 23, 24?
Yeah.
So that's, with 28, you're now up to, at a minimum, 50. 50 new names every year. Yeah. Are you going to keep doing this?
Yep.
Let's see if I can fix this window.
It's nuts, man. And I mean, Florida is probably one of the schools that was a little bit more active in the transfer portal compared to some other schools that are maybe not going through a coaching change or maybe weren't 4-8. But I just don't know if I can do the 56 new kids a year, Jordan.
Bro, that's an NFL roster. That's an NFL roster with some backups. Week.
Jesus.
I don't know. Why isn't it 105 scholarships like the other conferences? SECs, it's just different.
Just means less scholarships.
Yeah, I think that they're probably operating under certain assumptions or an assumption. Well,
the extra scholarships, to my understanding, the extra 105, those 20 scholarships came out of your $20.5 million that you got for revenue share. I think it was like $2.5 million of that could go to scholarships. And I think the schools that went up to 105 said, all right, well, they use that money. And I think some schools were operating, the CSCs even come out to put out like, hey, if you're not using that $2.5 million that's earmarked for scholarships and you're using it to pay players, like they're going to start like taxing that money or fining you on top of that money.
Gotcha.
And I think that's kind of what the SEC was like. No, we're fine at 85 with 20 walk-ons and you can pay the 85 more, or you can use, you know, some, you know, collectives. I know we had walk-ons on our roster last year. And you start making, you know, hey, you can get that 85 to rev share and collective money, you know, over the cap money. And then create a really competitive space for those 20 through offering, you know, over the cap money. So I think that's the way the SEC was operating. But as is everything at AL, it'll change in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I don't know, man. The whole thing is just between the transfer portal stuff, the scholarship limits, the calendar of football. You know, the national championship next year is on January 25th, which is like 2 full months. I think that they end on November 28th is the last game of regular season before you know, the
conference championship,
Army Navy game in the conference championships. Nearly 2 months.
Yeah.
What are we doing here, Jordan?
Trying to find a way to make this transfer portal right. They don't know what to do. That's the problem.
So I think you go back to, you can only transfer once with some exceptions. If you graduated,
I don't know if they're going to be able to win.
You can transfer once without sitting out, except for if you graduated. You did your school, you graduated, go get a certificate. I love the soundbite from Carson Beck. Did you have class today? He's like, no, I graduated 2 years ago. Don't worry about my classes.
And then he had to go back and be like, oh, well, I took classes last –
Also, it's like, yeah, it's a spring semester. I'm not even going to – I'm not going to go to these classes. I'll be dropping them. Like, I had to be an enrolled student to play, so I enrolled, but couldn't tell you my professor's name. And like that's what it is.
No, but he apparently did get all A's. If you're wondering, the master's program he's at the University of Miami. If you're looking for a master's degree,
I'm gonna go back and get a master's. If you graduate, that's good. If your head coach leaves, I don't care if your position coach leaves. If your head coach leaves, you should be able to go. I think you get one free one. I think that you have. I think you have cut designations. Like, hey, we have that. We have DSA, like designated non-scholarship player. They have that now.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have that, like, you're like, to steal an NFL term, you have a DFA, like, or a guy who, a cut designation, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Like, hey, you were a cut casualty because we had to get our numbers right. We had, guys come in either through the portal or through high school recruiting, and you were a number casualty. You're allowed to transfer. That's not you transferring; that's you being told to transfer. You got cut.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Jordan would never get cut.
No, Jordan would never get cut. The Gators did land a transfer, but then a commitment. So just letting you guys know, I'm sure the kid's a great kid, but I'm very glad that I'm not going to have to say this on the pod throughout the season. His name is Samu Tua Manu Pepe. That's, the best that I'm going to give you. He was the number 108 defensive lineman in the transfer portal. Reason we're talking about it is I know that he went public with his announcement. He has decided instead to go to Colorado. The internet seemed happy. But if you saw that name, that is what happened. He's going to be going to join Deion Sanders and the Buffalo or the Colorado Buffaloes. Gators did land another kicker, Liam Padrone from Texas A&M. Has 3 seasons of eligibility left. Did not attempt a ton of kicks at A&M. Did get a few kickoffs, I believe. He did have a field goal. I'm sorry. He kicked it off one time in 2025 as a true freshman, kicked it 58 yards. In 2024, then he had a 62-yard kickoff against Utah State and then 4 kickoffs against Samford. So, again, you probably wanted another kicker that the Gators got. They brought over Tulane kicker Patrick Durkin and punter Alec Clark. So you now have 2 kickers, and you want to operate a system where you have 2 kickers on the roster at any given time. So I don't know a ton about him. Was a 3-star out of high school, but again, Liam Padrone, the last time the Gators had a Latino kicker, turned out all right.
Eddie,
shout out to Odell Kickham. You were there with him, right?
What a time.
Eddie Pinheiro?
Of course. The whole crowd screaming, Eddie.
Only kicker ever going to Maybach.
I was like, I've never seen somebody cheering for a kicker in my life of playing, but that's how bad our offense was, I guess. We have to just be ready for a field goal. We were down really bad. At least we were getting in field goal range, right?
We were down bad. I know we were down bad because people were asking me what Austin Harden – what his makes and misses were in warmups. So I'm there because I'm getting asked by fans with binoculars in the press box watching a kicker warm up to be like, hey, he was 7 of 15 in warmups. I don't know what to tell you. Sorry. Bet the under today.
Yeah. Austin Harden was not beloved by the Gator faithful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Midtown legend.
Yeah, he was.
Heard some stories. I hope he had a good college experience. I think he did overall.
Oh, 100%.
Wonder what he's doing now.
I don't know.
You think he's on LinkedIn?
Very likely. Yeah.
He was with an I, right?
A-S-T-N, yeah. H-A-R-D-I-N.
Yeah.
Look at Dan, LinkedIn superstar.
He works for
the NFL.
He lives in New York. He is a global strategy leader at Uber. He's climbed the ladder. Worked at Morgan Stanley. He worked for a capital investment group, and now he's been climbing the ladder. And it's worked out a hell of a career for himself. Got free college, hell of a career at Midtown, and then now he's doing great things.
Went from Midtown to Midtown with That's Morgan right. Stanley.
Midtown Don't forget the roids.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. One of the swollest kickers I ever seen in my life.
Allegedly. Gym rat.
Yeah, coach's kid. Gators also grabbed a wide receiver, Jalen Lloyd, from Oklahoma State. He started his career at Nebraska. I think he had 3 touchdowns his freshman year at Nebraska, over 50 yards. His PFF rating on catches over 50 yards was a 99.9, which I didn't know was possible. But shout out to him for doing that. Didn't play at Oklahoma State much. He had 8 of his 9 catches there. Went for 73, 66, 59, and 58, but only 19. I'm sorry, he didn't play at Oklahoma State. Those are all from Nebraska. Only 19 career receptions. Does bring a vertical component. Obviously a very fast guy, but again, you know, a guy that for me, you can look at some of those stats and be excited about them. But also you can say, well, why didn't she get on the field at Oklahoma State? Now, we don't always know the situation over there, but that's just with the receivers in the portal with some of the more proven stats. Maybe a guy that just was in the wrong offense at the right time or wrong time. Obviously, they made a head coaching change in the middle of their season as well. But, you know, a guy that you feel like has the talent to be able to get down the field and score. It's just a matter of, you know, where does he fit on this this roster and can he earn that spot and can we find that big play potential out of him again?
Yeah, this seems like the Aiden Rizel replacement, like verified track speed. He was originally committed to Florida for track and before deciding to play football in college. When I watched the highlight tapes, a lot of 9 routes and not a lot of the tree. It looked like a tree in the winter. Most of the other branches had fallen off. But yeah, you needed to replace those guys. I think the biggest thing was, like Summerall said it in his opening press conference, the biggest thing was retention. I don't think there was a big push to keep Trey Wilson. The guys that they pushed to keep, I think they kept, and the two biggest in that room, obviously Vernell Brown and Dallas Wilson. And then you're just building around them. I know everyone, you know, Cam Coleman hit the portal. I can't wait to see him hit the portal again next year.
He's going to the NFL next year.
Continue climbing the ladder. I thought he was
a junior.
He's a junior next year. Hit the NFL portal. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing was you've got your 1 and your 2 and filling in productive pieces around them.
When you've got your 3 with Singleton, right, Eric Singleton coming over from Auburn, right. You have a couple of guys that you've retained that are going to probably have an opportunity maybe ahead of some of these guys, but you probably want to fill that room out with some different pieces, especially if they're a 1-year rental type. To be able to see what can we do to get the bodies on the field and maybe we find a hidden gem here.
Yeah, and I think so you get like TJ Abrams back as well. He's another piece. And Yeah, the room should be fine. I think you get those two guys back. Eric Singleton's a guy who you weren't really fighting in the other schools. I know Texas Tech came on once he undeclared for the draft. I think he like declared for the draft and undeclared and went in the portal. Or maybe you just go in the portal. You're not really undeclaring, but you go in the portal. Getting him is big. I think that room is solid. Yeah, the retention that Florida did, I think we said it all last year, like, hey, this roster is really good. Definitely better than the final record. And keeping the core pieces of that was important and expensive.
I bet. I mean, it's just what you were kind of competing with, right? You're about to go against a bunch of teams who know that we have talent on our roster as well. So they were trying to grab us while we were all scrambling. But luckily we had the, you know, the money to be able to keep some of these guys. Obviously we weren't able to keep all, but I do think that receiver piece was a good get. Just another depth piece in that, somebody who can, you know, make the room compete and, you know, fight their way up the roster to kind of be a guy for us. Not the main guy, but, you know, just another gadget player or something that we, if we need him.
Yeah, who knows? We'll see. You know, again, I had some definitely some moments, and like Nick said, he was committed to Mike Holloway and the UF track team before deciding to go to Nebraska to play football. So we know he's got the speed. Now it's just a matter of, you know, is there an opportunity, and what does that opportunity look like? And, you know, might be a guy that you give the ball in space to and see what he can do, or you just say, hey, we've got to make a Hail Mary at the end of this quarter, end of this period, and just send him flying and hope for the best. But that's where Florida's at now with bringing him in, Jalen Lloyd. And then finally the Gators grabbed another snapper, or long snapper, pardon me, Hunter Sowald from Washington. He was rated a 5-star snapper by Cole's Kicking Cams coming out of high school. Again, the Gators are just looking to add another long snapper. It seems to me like they might have a different long snapper for a punter and for place kicking, but I guess we'll see. But the Gators did grab the Louisiana transfer at long snapper a couple weeks ago. You add him into the room, and again, if you don't have anybody, you lost your senior in Underwood, and then you lost Mac Mulhern to the transfer portal, who was your freshman that you brought in. So you went from 2 to 0, now back to 2. If people are wondering why Florida has 2, you had 2 on your roster last year too. So no thoughts on Hunter Sowald. Jordan, I figured this would be your time to shine, brother.
I think this is Nick's ballpark right here.
Special. Yeah, special teams. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, because Florida, Joe Houston, credit to him, he's at LSU. He took 2 of them. But Florida had everything set up perfectly for special teams. You had 3 seniors, and then you had 3 true freshmen, long snapper, punter, kicker. And I thought, perfect. Those guys stay around for 4 years. So you get a redshirt year out of all of them. They'll be here for 5. And then they all left when Joe Houston wasn't retained. So you have to go out in the portal and find guys. And, I think I've said it before here, but from my interactions with Summerall, is that everyone's going to compete and doesn't really care how much Florida Victorious is paying you, how much rev share you're making, whoever's playing the best. Almost kind of like Todd Golden, like, hey, whoever's playing best in practice is the guy that's going to play. I think it's changed. Darian Mensah, when he started at Tulane, was making less than the rest of the quarterback room. And he started because he was the best quarterback, certainly not making less than the rest of the Tulane quarterback room from 3 years ago now. That you're going to have competition. So you bring in a couple kickers, and Jordan's watched this kicking competition at practice. You probably enjoyed that. You get some time off. Jordan wasn't on teams.
Yeah.
You get a little extra plug on the sideline, get to chirp the kickers. I think the punter, Alex Lloyd, will probably be your guy. He's got 2 years left. Shout out to Australia. He's got 2 years left. I think he'll be your guy at punter. And then you get some competition
Yeah. We'll see. They committed. We have to talk about them. I'm not an expert at watching long snapper tape, but if you're ranked a five-star, now it's not a six-star by Coles, who's the only one that seems to give out six stars. Being ranked five-star seems pretty good. Question from the chat here. The Gators lost Banks, Micah, and Sapp. They replaced Sapp with Emmanuel Odebayo. We go with the Odebayo. The J is probably silent. What are they going to do to replace Micah and Banks? So right now it looks like the nose tackle is what? Brandon Bett and Joseph Mbachu?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're thinking. And then the defensive tackle, that three technique, whatever, Jamari Lyons and Jeremiah McLeod.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you added Mason Clinton and DK Kalu as your rotational guys in there.
Yeah, I think that gives you three each. Also, I look at somebody, you know, someone asked me if you move LJ McCray inside. I think he's too fast, too twitchy. You're kind of wasting him if you move him inside. I look at someone like Jalen Wiggins, who is a monster. Still looks, I say he is young. Facially, might look like a 35-year-old man. But his body frame, I feel like, is closer to being able to move in and playing defensive tackle than LJ, who's 6'6", long and lean. I think Wiggins right now is listed at like 245, but kind of, you know, I remember when they asked Tyreek Sapp to go in, and Tyreek Sapp was probably eating at all-you-can-eat buffets for a month just to try to get from like 230 to 260. I think Wiggins is certainly taller and already wider, bigger than Sapp was. Yeah. But that'd be if you need it. He's, you know, he's a defensive end. I think you're, I think it's more of a 4-2 or 4-3. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone has to play nickel because it's just the way offenses play, but I think it's more of a traditional 4-3 with two defensive ends. More
yeah,
so than
I think
like
you're going to see, yeah, more 4-2-5 rather than 3-3-5. Just based on what we've noticed in the past there. So, I mean, theoretically, that gives you three guys at defensive tackle, three guys at nose tackle. There could certainly be, you know, somebody that shows out, somebody that switches positions. But three, especially in this day and age, at each position is probably like the best we're going to get, right? Like there's not, I think long are the days of you wait for that freshman that you sign that sits behind somebody for 2 years to then move into that role. It's, you've got to build one or two guys per, and then you just got to hope that you get a little lucky in the transfer portal with your next couple guys after that, because it's just not the day of stacking talent anymore. So, you know, Jordan and I were talking about it a little bit pre-show. You just got to get used to learning 50 new names every year, and that's just the way that it's going to be. Yeah, Kendall Gurville is another name that can move. Yeah, potentially. Yeah. I know that there are some walk-ons. Just looking at the roster here, Sebastian Scott was a guy. But again, I think that's just the world that we have to get used to living in is you might not be able to go one for one anymore in terms of what that next person looks like coming in. So,
yeah, we'll break it down. Go ahead. In the, you know, it's like you said, when you just said that one for one, like, it's not like, I don't know which big paycheck, you know, you're talking about, but it's not, it's a whole new coaching staff. So every position room might be valued differently. You've got Dave Caldwell as the GM now, and he's really the one who is scouting and doing all that kind of stuff. He's corrected Banks and Micah. I can't talk about what people were making, but like you're also spending it on other players. Like guys that you retained aren't being retained for what they made last year, if that makes sense. Yeah. So you didn't just lose a defensive tackle contract to replace a defensive tackle with. That money comes off the books, and it's okay. Well, some of it goes here, some goes here, some goes here, and quickly to retain a roster that it's not like, oh, that was the defensive tackle. Also, big mammals are not cheap. Big mammals are not cheap, but I think the Emmanuel from Jack State is a guy they really, really like. And a lot of teams really, really liked. He went on a couple visits. I know Texas A&M felt good. Texas felt good. So yeah, there's a lot of like moving parts that go around, in behind the scenes when it comes to stuff like that.
Mute it up, Dan.
Sorry, I don't want to have my ice keep sloshing in my microphone here. So that gives the Gators 28 transfers. I would imagine we're nearing the end. The transfer portal in terms of when you could enter closed on the 15th, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 16, a couple of names are still can still be added, I think, within 48 hours of when the transfer portal closed, or so you might still hear a couple names or two. You know, some folks we saw get tampered with there at the very end, including Duke's quarterback. So
yeah, I would say till Wednesday, Dan, because Friday was the deadline.
Right.
Right. Like 11:59 Friday, the compliance offices are closed. Right. And then it's two business days.
And it's the holiday today. Yep.
So you didn't have to put it in Friday or Friday. Didn't have to put it in Saturday. Didn't have to put it in Sunday. Didn't have to put it in Monday. So your 48-hour clock really is starting, you know, at midnight tonight. So you could see guys trickling in as of Wednesday.
Okay, perfect. So you still might see some people visiting, but I would imagine with the way the college classes have already started, I know at the University of Florida, there's that drop ad period. You probably won't see too many left to go. Let's pull up where the Gators ranked on three with the transfer portal. Now the Gators did obviously keep a lot of their big guys. You know, there was that Fab Five or whatever we want to call it for the Gators, and they were able to keep all five of those. That's not necessarily factored in to what this looks like from an overall ranking perspective. But the Gators ranked 12th on three. Texas Tech, Indiana, Texas A&M, Louisville, Virginia Tech, LSU. You'll notice a theme here with new coaches. Texas, Houston, Notre Dame, Arkansas, UCLA, and Florida. Of the schools that ranked higher than them, you know, a lot of them took more players than Florida did as well in that group. LSU took 37, UCLA took 40, Arkansas took 34. So when you factor in all of that, you know, the Gators did seemingly pretty well.
Yeah. Also, like, I'm going back last year. So last year, Texas Tech, number one, they had a great season. LSU's number two, fired their coach. Ole Miss, Oregon, Miami, all in the playoff. So four of the five teams were in the playoff, but then six, Missouri, seven, Auburn, eight, North Carolina, nine, Rutgers. And then 10 Ohio State, who was in the playoff of your top 10. So a lot of disparity. Some teams who did really well in the portal made the playoff, and some teams, including number two LSU, fired their coach.
We've got an advisor at UF said they can still enroll if we want them to this week and maybe into next week too. So, again, you might hear a name or two heading into to UF, but that's where the Gators finished right now. There's still going to be holes going into this roster, and I think that that's going to be true for a variety of reasons. One is because I think that that's just the nature of college football now. You're just going to have more holes now. And then two, it's a new coaching staff. It's a different staff, and everybody's kind of fighting for those same people. Your defensive tackles, your nose tackles, your tackles on the offensive line are going to be the ones that everybody wants. And there's just not a lot of those guys that enter the portal each and every year. So Florida had a lot of holes. They lost a lot of guys. You try to fill that in, and not everybody is going to play. So then you have to fill in some people with some Jags, unfortunately, and hope that your scouting department did a good enough job to be able to identify the people that have the raw talent. And you have to have enough hope and faith in your strength and conditioning staff in the off season, and then your coaches during the season to be able to develop those guys. So there might be some names that might disappoint you now that show out and do really well next season. There might be some names that you're super hopeful about that maybe don't turn out into to what exactly you wanted, but that's the changing nature of college football now. And when you bring 56 new guys in every year, just kind of have to roll with the punches sometimes.
Real quick, this one. They get a 5-day window. So until January 25th, if you are playing in the national championship game and you want to enter the portal, you have an extra 5-day window.
Okay.
And then back to still back in the trenches. Yeah, I think you could look at it that way. I think people are more
real quick, Nick, before you go on. It says my only point is trenches win this league and we downgraded at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I can see how you say that. I also don't know that. I think people are angrier that Mekhi left and happier they would have been than if he stayed. Like, because he left, I think you're making him an all-SEC player, which he could be, but he hasn't been that. He's had knee issues that he has to deal with and misses practice because of that. Nice guy, good nose tackle, but I think we're talking about him as if, like, Florida lost a first-team All-American. Just the number of times that I hear people bringing him up to me, like, well, we didn't keep Mekhi. And I'm like, I was, like, trying to pull up the PFF stats. I don't think he had a great year, but again, he's battling injury throughout the year. And then to Caleb Banks, like, he was developed here. Mm-hmm. I remember when we were having the conversation about this kid from Louisville coming, it was like, okay, we'll see him in 3 years. Cause like, this is a skinny guy who doesn't have a lot of production or experience. So I think, you know, we weren't really excited. He turned into a great player and a leader in the locker room. So I can see where you're coming from saying like, okay, we've downgraded, but like, we also don't really know what we're getting. Like, we didn't know what Caleb Banks is getting. And I think we are, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think we're overvaluing Mekhi just because it's a loss and it's a player that we wanted to keep. But like, I feel like, maybe I'm making too much of it, but I feel like it's the amount of questions I'm getting is like that we lost a star.
Yeah. Time will tell.
Yeah, I'm about to say, time will tell if he was a win or a loss for us with him leaving. I do feel like we got a great D-line coach, so I'm not really too concerned about them like producing and being good for us. I mean, even last year, we didn't have Caleb Banks for a good amount of the year, and the defense was still doing well. Obviously, it was tough for us to be able to sustain drives, for them to be able to be as good as they can be. But I think as long as we're a well-rounded team, we're not going to have a problem with D-line, honestly.
Yeah. Just to finalize the transfer portal stuff, again, there still might be some time where some players are announced over the next couple of days, some players coming in to visit. Obviously, Miami and Indiana, you would imagine, are going to have some fair share of transfers as well. But running through the list, just pulled this up. So if I miss somebody, my apologies. But the Gators, again, like I said, finished 12th or are currently ranked 12th, ended up with 9 guys in the top 210. In terms of transfer portal rankings, Eric Singleton came in at number 37, Luke Harpering, number 97, Emeka Ujiri at 154, DK Kalu at 165, Emmanuel Adebayo, 178, Aaron Philo, 181, Evan Pryor at 208, and Micah Mays at 210. So, so that's where the Gators are at. Some big gets, a lot of guys filling in some of these spots. So that's where the Gators finished in the transfer portal time. So, that's kind of it, boys. Not a lot to talk about today. We've got a national championship today. We'll do fun with 2 final ad reads to end the show. But who do you guys got tonight?
Hoosiers? Saw an absolutely unhinged
fan on the plane.
50-something-year-old. As white as mayonnaise, middle America could be, screaming at people on the plane, saying his name. He likes to have fun wherever he goes, and demanding in the Middle East, flyover country kind of way, a mid America kind of way of being like, I demand that you join me in this Hoosiers chant on this plane. Several people did. I don't know if it was the response he wanted, but he did sit back down. But go Hoosiers.
Would you participate in a chant like that? on an airplane. I don't know where the flight was coming from.
So yeah, I don't know. I would be
Indianapolis to Fort Lauderdale based flight. But I could only imagine, what if it was like, man, what if it was like a Denver to Memphis connection flight to get down and got to be like, dude, no.
Yeah, I would. I don't know, because he gave off big corn vibes.
He did.
Gave off big corn, big wheat.
Yeah.
And I'm so I don't
definitely
I don't
a think tractor I owner.
I don't think I would have thought he owns a John Deere too, John Deere header too.
So for sure.
I don't know that I would have thought that we were under attack, or that the plane was being hijacked, or that we were in danger. But I would have been like, hey man, shut up. Like, hey, leave me alone back here in the middle seat of 32B. Like, this is bad enough back here on Southwest communist boarding. Sit down. Bring the drink cart around.
No, Southwest does seats now, don't they?
Oh, I don't know.
I think I think as
I made the move. I made the move. We only fly Delta now.
Wow. Okay.
Got the card.
That or Delta guy now. Private, of course. we got some breaking news for us. Corey's not here to criticize this, so I'll make the announcement here. The Dolphins have hired Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley to be their new head coach. That marks 10 seasons in a row, or no, I'm sorry, 10 coaches in a row that the Dolphins have not hired a previous NFL head coach with experience in it.
I think we have like the third or in the bottom six in terms of cap space for next year.
Yeah,
a quarterback, CTE to us. Yeah. We're just in a bad spot.
One that doesn't want to be there.
That's cool. Get whatever you can for him. Get the money off the books. Get what you can for him. We are just in purgatory. We're never bad enough to be a good draft pick. We haven't won a playoff game.
We are the longest franchise in all four major sports without a playoff victory.
The year was 2000.
Jay Fiedler, Jordan, right?
Jordan was playing at recess in middle school.
Yes, I was about to say probably not even
elementary school. Jordan,
Nick, you and I are about the same age. I'm about to tick 1 year older tomorrow, and if you would have put me in little 12-year-old Dan's body and be like, this is the last time you're going to see a win, I probably would have enjoyed it a little bit more, because the Dolphins at that point were just in the playoffs every year. Like, we didn't win anything, but we were just in the playoffs.
We were complaining about losing playoff games. And now you and I are both playoffs.
I would have gone to high school, college, and had a 15-year working career. And still, I don't know when the Dolphins will win a playoff game again. If it's before 2030, I'd be shocked.
Yeah. Yeah, we're very far off.
Just very far off.
So I'm just not emotionally invested.
No.
I've emotionally detached myself from the Dolphins. I did enjoy watching the Buffalo Bills lose.
That's great.
Fantastic.
You guys think that was a catch?
Sure wasn't. Sure wasn't.
Because it doesn't fit your narrative? Yeah.
Doesn't fit my narrative. Wouldn't have made me as happy. So sure wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a catch. I thought it was some real controversial calls this weekend overall. Like, it was a lot of bad calls. But
Do you see one of the games the refs line the kickoff at the 40 instead of the 35?
No.
I mean, what are we doing here, guys?
You got to get some new refs in, man.
There's too much money. There's too much money involved now. You can't be doing that kind of stuff. All right, let's get
one. Coaches, refs need to get fired too. Shit.
All right, we'll do two final ad reads. We appreciate everybody for watching. Hope everybody had a great weekend. One time for our friends over at Game Time Sidekicks, go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Go visit GameTimeSidekicks.com. Use promo code. No, I'm sorry. Let's start that up. Shout out to Game Time Sidekicks. HomeFieldApparel.com. Go to HomeFieldApparel.com. Use promo code StadiumAndGale at checkout. You get 20% off of your order. A lot of great retro design, soft cotton, great product out there. GameTimeSidekicks.com, promo code Stadium and Gale. Pardon me.
And an extra shout out to them. They are all Indiana grads. They started their company making Indiana Hoosiers merch.
What a day for them. They're definitely at the game.
They are. They're all down there. They had a collaboration with the CFP. They were making shirts and designs. So shout out to Josh and all the guys I know over there at Home Field. This is I ran into somebody yesterday wearing an Indiana shirt, older guy, must probably be in the late 60s, early 70s. And I was like, man, pretty exciting season. He goes, I never thought I would see the day where Indiana football is playing for a national championship. He's like, this is incredible.
I mean, that's how it's going to feel in the Dolphins.
Indiana football is, in their history, 181 games, including this season, 181 games under 500.
Jesus,
that's incredible. Man, that's incredible.
Shout out to the Cubes. Shout out to Sig.
Yeah.
Man, I hope they win.
It's going to be a good one tonight.
I hope they
win. I don't think Miami laying down how everybody think they will, so it'll be a good game.
No, I don't. I think it's going to be a good game. That offense and defensive line of Miami just scares me, man. I know Indiana plays good, sound, fundamental football.
Such good, sound, fundamental football that people are wondering if Connor Stallions is on staff.
Uh-huh. Who knows? Hey, one more time for Hunter Stallions for Connor Stallions today. I need him to pull this one out for me. If he's on the roster, if they're cheating, I don't care. I don't care if they have to later vacate because they did cheat. I just can't have Miami win. I can't have that. For John Ruiz, I can't have it for anybody over there. And then one final time for our friends over at Alumni Hall. Go visit alumnihall.com or go visit them in Gainesville on Archer Road. Let them know your friends over at Stadium Gale sent you the largest selection of Florida Gator merchandise in the entire city of Gainesville. So go visit alumnihall.com. I haven't done Song of the Week, and we don't do it as much anymore as we used to, but I do want to give a shout out to a guy that I heard on Spotify the other day. His name is Silas Noah, and I think you guys like him. It's a little folk, a little Americana, not really country, just a really good artist that is still relatively new. So that's S-I-L-A-S-N-O-A-H is the last name. So go check him out. It's a song called Firelight that I like. So anyway, boys, Corey will be back next week. He was traveling this week for work. He'll be back later today. Hope you guys enjoy the national championship. We'll be back at the same time that we normally are next week. And we appreciate you, guys. Go Hoosiers. Go Hoosiers. See you guys.